Well, the first question is, why do people want to hack NASA in the first place? Well, for one thing, it's high profile. But they choose NASA because they're interested in NASA. They would like NASA to notice them. And kids like to be naughty, let's face it. The trick is, the kids don't really understand what kind of power they actually wield when they're playing with computers. And whenever I talk to somebody who's newly coming into computers, I tell them, listen, don't work at learning this stuff. Play with it. That's what the kids do. That's how they learn so quickly. The problem is that the adults for decades have been told, you must be a member of the computer priesthood to understand computers. At least my generation was told that for decades. Well, the kids have been told that for decades. They don't believe it when you do tell them. And they just hack away at the keyboard until it does what they want it to do. And that is the true definition of a hacker, someone who just hacks away at the keyboard until it does what they want it to do. The press has usurped our rightful title and handed off to these 14-year-old twerps that crack into computer systems. Not much we can do about it, but we try and inform the media when we can, when we're being interviewed, and then the editor goes back and switches the definitions back. By the way, I'm the Cheshire Catalyst. My claim to fame many years ago was helping to publish the TAP newsletter for phone freaks and computer crackers. What I was doing back in those days when I wanted to be naughty was waltzing my way through the World Telex Network. It was very obscure. Nobody else was into it. Didn't make any headlines, so it didn't really get known except within the community. But publishing stuff with the TAP newsletter is how I made my name. More recently, I'm gaining a bit of a reputation for what I consider the ultimate phone freak hack. I got my own area code. Thank you. Let me tell you a bit of the story behind that. I live in Central Florida, Titusville, outside the main gates of the Kennedy Space Center. They were going to split the 407 area code. I went up on the internet. Being an old phone freak, I knew to look at the website of NANPA.com, the North American Numbering Plan Administration, the people that issue area codes. And I found the list. You know the list. 201 New Jersey, 202 DC, blah, 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 blah. I'm going down the list. 321, available for geographic relief. Wait a minute. The space cadet in me says that the countdown capital of the world deserves to be area code 321. Powered down the web browser, powered up the word processor, prepared my testimony before the Public Service Commission, which is going to have the hearings in Orlando, took the night off from work. It was worth being tagged the occurrence, I thought. Proved to be right. Went to the meeting, had five copies of my testimony, because I learned in New York State that you want one for each commissioner and one for the person transcribing. They love it when they can work from your notes and then they can flow with the ad-libs from there. Because I presented testimony back in New York State. Another long story, won't go into that. They loved the idea from the get-go. The one commissioner told me that whenever they have bad news like this for people, and changing an area code is bad news for a lot of people, they'd love to have some kind of sugar coating to put on it. And this was just what they were looking for. The commission chairman came up to me later and said, you know, we'd gone to NANPA. We asked them for such a list as you presented to us in your testimony, and they told us it was proprietary information. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. It was approved. So the way I look at it, I asked for it, they approved it, it's my area code, but I share. I did, however, save the best number for myself. Now, the day after I gave my testimony, I went down to the kiosk in the mall. I dialed the number I wanted. It was still a 407 number, but the 543 exchange, while being in Brevard County, which would be included in the new area code, that particular number was not yet in use. The recording said so. The number you have reached is not currently in use. Blah, 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 bell solvability, blah, blah, blah. Went down to the kiosk. I would like this number, please. Fine, sir. Let me check with the boys, and see if we can. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir, but I'm told that that number is within 100 group, which has a corporate rate. So it belongs to the company that has that corporate rate. I'm terribly sorry, but we can't let you have that number. Fine. Okay, I'll let it go. A couple months later, they actually approve the 321 area code. And now it's time to hop up on the internet again. BellSouthMobility.com. Okay. Oh, about the company. Okay. Mark Fiedler is president of Bell South Mobility. This is interesting. Let's see. Contact a company. The email address of a publicity flack. Let's see. First name underscore last name at, Mark underscore Fiedler at, Dear Mr. Fiedler. Explain, blah, 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 321, my idea, blah, blah, blah. Would like this number. And the reason is, you know, it's my area code. This way, although it would be 407 now, come November 1st, 1999, when the area code goes into effect, my telephone number would be 321 liftoff. That is my cell phone number. Thank you. I've actually spent the last couple of years hanging out at the Space Center. I took a course with the Florida Space Institute that was open to the public. The Florida Space Institute is a consortium of local colleges and universities in Central Florida, starting with the University of Central Florida, which acts as the secretariat, pretty much, of the Institute. It includes Emory-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. It includes Brevard Community College, because it is Brevard County after all, Florida Institute of Technology in Melbourne. Let's see, I think there are one or two other. Rollins College might be involved. There's some college, I think Broward Community College in Fort Lauderdale, which also has membership, but they very rarely send students up. That's a 2.5-3 hour drive from Fort Lauderdale, so they don't come in for weekly classes. There is talk of doing distant learning experiments via internet. But they had a course open to the public, and basically it was an insider's look at the Space Center. One moment. Let's see. We've got the internet here. FSI.UCF.edu. Courses offered. And by the way, you'll find that there are alt tags under each of those logos, because I was working on the web page at that time. Not getting the course this time around? There it is. 29:30. Space Science and Technology is the course. A comprehensive introduction to space science and technology covering the past, present, and future of manned and unmanned civil, military, and commercial space programs. Basically, there was a two-hour lecture, and then you jumped on the buses, and you went somewhere on the complex, either Kennedy Space Center or across the Banana River to the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. You got to look at hardware close up. ENG 2930 VAB Pictures. Students. Oh, that's the zip file. Well, going out to one of my image directories. Out there. This is the Aussie website, my real world identity. This picture is a shot inside the vehicle assembly building with the class along behind the vehicle. That's the Space Shuttle Columbia. Let's see, there's the cute one, two people over behind. I'm right here. And this fellow is Dr. Sam Durance, our professor. Two-time Space Shuttle Mission Specialist. Every week, he ground out the lecture. And me and the professor from FIT usually had to raise our hands and correct him on some minor point about past rocket launches of 20 or 30 years before. Because we were the old farts, and we've been watching the program since too long. See, these aren't loading quick enough. Yeah, it's a dial-up connection for one thing. This will drop me back into spaceyideas.com. This is where I have the chronology about the thing. It's my area code, but I share. This photo loading shows me and Governor Jeb Bush of Florida speaking before the Space Congress in 1999, which is an annual trade show where all the contractors at the Space Center get together and show off their wares in an exhibit hall. The public is invited and usually walk off with bunches of really cool posters. Lots of other good reasons to attend as well. The other photo waiting to load in over here is a screenshot from Jeopardy, where the Jeopardy answer is, in 1999, several counties around Cape Canaveral, Florida, were assigned this new telephone area code. And, of course, the question is, what is 321? Farther down, we show, on November 1st, 1999, Governor Jeb Bush placing the first official phone call from the Public Service Commission headquarters in Tallahassee to a teleconference room at the Kennedy Space Center. Here's my professor, Dr. Durance, and the gray-headed, the gray-haired individual there in the disguise, the suit and tie, is me. Let's see. Now, so I've been hanging around the Space Center a lot. If you guys start hacking the NASA website, you ain't going to be able to do what you want to do. And the question is, what do you really want to do if you want to get yourself noticed by NASA? You want to go up, right? You want to go into space. I understand that. I'm a space cadet. Why do I hang around the Space Center? You know, I'd like to go up. Well, I'm in my 50s now. I'm not going to go. I realize this. But I still hold the dream. I still want to share the dream. Where am I on launch day? I've got a badge now because I was webmaster of the Florida Space Institute site for a while. And I can now, you know, drive out to the Vehicle Assembly Building, which is that three-mile line that they don't let anybody cross. I can stand out there and watch shuttles go up. Instead, I'm usually in Titusville. Hang on a second. Launch viewing, frequently asked questions. This is at spaceyideas.com. And one of the questions is, where's the best place to view a space shuttle launch? And in my humble opinion, that place is Space View Park in Titusville if you haven't got a NASA pass. Space View Park is just off of US 1 on the Indian River in Titusville. The city and county have put together a lovely park there. The Burger King was in walking distance until a hurricane came by a year or so ago, and so that one got taken out. But across the street from that is 7-Eleven, and kitty corner from there is a KFC. So we got food. We've got a wonderful view 10 miles across the river. Here's the park, and straight out here is Launch Complex 39. Direct view across the river. If you're down in Cocoa Beach area, down here, you don't get as good a view. Now, Cocoa Beach is great for shots that take off from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station here, but Launch Complex 39 is closer to Titusville. So that's where you want to be for a shuttle launch. And here's the map, US 1 snaking around. State Route 406 goes out to Interstate 95, which back up here. Let's see. So I'm looking at this map backwards from behind the screen. So there's 95. 406 goes across. Let's see. Nope. Here's 406, right? I-95, 406 to US 1, and you're just a couple of blocks from where the park is. Because 406, take a jig and a jag, and you're at the park. Get to the site, bring up this page on how to get to Spaceview Park, and print it out. And every lunch now, I usually meet one or two people who found the park from this page on the internet. So if what we're really trying to do is become an astronaut, let's look at what it takes. I got this email from a kid, turned out to be in Germany, actually. The thing I want to know is, how can I become an astronaut? It's been my dream since I was a child. Please tell me your answer. Well, here come the rules. Okay, this is what it takes to become an astronaut. This is taken directly from the JSC website. Any adult man or woman in excellent physical condition who meets the basic qualifications can be selected to enter astronaut training. For mission specialists and pilot astronauts, the minimum requirements include a bachelor's degree in engineering, science, or mathematics from an accredited institution. 3 years of related experience must follow the degree, and an advanced degree is desirable. Pilot astronauts must have at least 1,000 hours of experience in jet aircraft, and they need better vision than mission specialists. Competition is extremely keen, with an average of over 4,000 applicants for about 20 openings every 2 years. Astronaut recruiting occurs periodically. For more information, write to, and an address is given. Now, if I thought this was all the kid needed to know, I'd just send him this and be done with it. My job is done. If you look at the scroll bar over here, you'll notice I got a whole lot of room left in this file. Let's get into it. First, let's look at Cheshire's Law, which I've modestly named after myself. You can't break the rules. But once you know what they are, you can abuse the heck out of them. Now, this is why you don't want to hack NASA, because if you break the rules, they got you. You'll never go up. You'll never have a chance. Follow the rules and keep smiling. Keep kissing it. You have a chance to go up. And when you get to Houston, if you read the book Dragonfly about the American astronauts' adventures on the Mir space station, you learn whose you have to kiss in Houston, and how often. But you get to go. Now, what NASA has said are the rules for becoming the astronaut are the rules. We now have to look at them with a creative eye. So, from a practical standpoint, you're not going to fly a shuttle in the next week or three. It means getting enough experience points to measure up to the standards NASA has set for the astronaut corps. But let's break down what they're telling you. First, any adult man or woman in excellent physical condition who meets the basic qualifications can be selected to enter astronaut training. First, you have to be fit. Did you ever meet an astronaut that didn't jog? Do you have a pair of running shoes? You can start your own personal astronaut training program today. If you really have the dream, it's what it takes. They say that the trip of a lifetime begins with a single step. Well, be sure you wear your running shoes because you don't want to hurt your feet. Now, for mission specialists and pilot astronauts, the minimum requirements include a bachelor's degree in engineering, science, or mathematics. Now, this is written from the standpoint of writing to a high school kid. Okay, looking around the room here today, some of you are past that. But some of you already have some of these degrees. And what degrees you don't have, you've still got time to go get. Because some of these astronauts are not being selected until their early 30s. Some of them don't get to fly until their late 30s, even though they've been selected, gone through all the training because of what missions they've been selected for, and delays, and delays, and more delays. You can still have the dream. It just takes a little work. Now, this is the requirement for both mission specialists, who have the most interesting jobs once the spacecraft achieves orbit, and pilots, who better know something more than just being a joystick jockey if they're going to spend a week or two doing more than twiddling their thumbs once they're upstairs. The rules also state 3 years of related experience must follow the degree, and an advanced degree is desirable. So you're going to have to get into the research community, where all that experience comes from. don't worry here, since there are some really interesting people in the research community. These are all the folks that Bill Nye, the science guy, talks to all the time. The trick here is to pick an area that you're interested in anyway. That way it's going to look like work to somebody else while you're having fun, the time of your life. Now, once you start into your chosen profession, just watch for things that lean you towards space. If you're leaning towards Mars landing missions, though, you might look into areas of geology and chemistry so you can analyze what's found there. If you're looking for the biomedical field, then lean towards things that may have applications for weightless experiments. Now, next in the NASA release, it says, pilot astronauts must have at least 1,000 hours experience in jet aircraft, and they need better vision than mission specialists. When reading the rules, you don't necessarily follow them in the order given. Here, check the vision requirement first. If you're already wearing glasses, forget being a pilot. You won't make the cut. If your eyes are okay, then start thinking about a military academy. Because only by going through the service can you get the kind of experience they want, the jet jockey experience, 1,000 hours experience in jet aircraft, that the rules say you must have before they even consider your application. So start looking at the recruiting posters with a new eye. They want to send you to the Air Force Academy? Well, right there, that cuts your college requirements and the jet jockey experience. Abuse those rules. That's what this is about. Competition is extremely keen, with an average of over 4,000 applicants for about 20 openings every 2 years. But you know what? The guys that are finally in that cut of 20 applicants usually were in the cut of 3,880 or 3,980 applicants the round before, and the round before that, and possibly even the round before that. Perseverance is an admirable trait in an astronaut, in the NASA view. And if you take the loss and get back up and try again and keep on trying, they like that. Because by the time of your third or fourth round, they know who you are by now. And now, you're higher up in that list when they cut it down to the short list. And if they're watching you, if you're following your own research with your own organization and doing things that are leaning towards a program they want to put up in space anyway, gives you more credence. And by then, you've been through their process a few times. They know who you are. They're now watching your career, along with a few others. That's okay. But everything that will give you an advantage, jump for it. You don't have to move to Florida and go to UCF so you're on their doorstep all the time and maybe working for a contractor and finding your way around the Space Center. Maybe it'd help. Maybe not. Give me a call if you're looking for relocation information. Now, does this look like we're setting out with a conspiratorial plan to get us where we want to go, like space? Well, yes. Let's not pull the punches. If you want to go, it's going to take this kind of work. Interesting sidebar. I have met astronauts, even before I had one as a professor. And one thing I found about them is they're very picky people. They're very picky about the kinds of machines they strap themselves into, the kinds of equipment they take along with them. They'd like it to work. If you've ever read novels, science fiction novels, like Protector by Larry Niven, there's a scene in there where the fellow from Earth takes a trip out to the asteroids. And he's surprised. He's shocked to find that everything in his hotel works. The air conditioning, you know, the water, it's the heat, it's elevators, everything. It all works. Boy, you'd almost think somebody's life depended on it or something. Well, yes. In space, your life depends on it. And these guys are picky about that kind of thing. So being picky is also considered a good trait in the astronaut service. Reading science fiction books, you know, getting the feel of what it'd be like out in space, that's always a good thing. There's an old, outdated technology called Morse code. but it gets you a ham license. Actually, you don't even need Morse code. You get a beginner's ticket. But if you get a beginner's ticket without Morse code, all you can use are the frequencies from 50 megahertz up. And you know what's there? Space satellites. Amateur radio space satellites that you can play with from the comfort of your own home. And you know what? If you ever do get up, you know what they'll have on board for you? Ham radios. It's one of the few hobbies you can take up with you. It also provides a backup emergency communications network. NASA likes backups. You may have heard that before. They actually had an outage with the Tedra system when they had the CEREX experiment flying. CEREX is the Shuttle Amateur Radio Experiment. And they were able to connect to their people in Australia and pass a message up via ham radio that Tedra would be out for the next pass. Don't worry about it. And by the time they come around again, they had the Tedra system operating again. Tedra is the tracking data and relay satellite by which they pass most of the communications traffic from the shuttle to Houston via White Plains. And but ham radio was the backup, a very useful backup. Again, if you read the book Dragonfly, which tells the story of the American astronauts aboard Mir, you'll find that the packet radio station on board Mir, which is data communications over amateur radio, became a very vital backup communications media for the guys to get word to their friends on the ground without Moscow Mission Control, without Houston Mission Control, because that's just how the guys sent their messages to each other. W5RRR is the Johnson Space Center Amateur Radio Club station, where it's just a bunch of hams, some of whom happen to be fellow astronauts. And having this kind of back channel is very handy. Having your ham ticket can be very useful. You don't have to wait to be in the NASA training program to find a local ham radio club who will be more than happy to show you where to get the books, give you the exams, and help you get your ham tickets you can get on the air, and help them out on field day to get more points when they go out to a field, contact other stations, and basically train to prepare for the days when there are emergencies, when ham operators go out and help provide communications when it all blows down. I myself spent a week in Homestead following Hurricane Andrew, providing communications for a food distribution site. All of these kinds of things come in handy. The Alpha Bravo Charlie phonetic alphabet. You're going to need that. We use that in ham radio all the time. It is the international standard phonetic alphabet. You can start learning that today. Again, you can start beginning your own personal astronaut training program. My own name as Ozzy would be Oscar Zulu Zulu India Echo. As Cheshire, it would be Charlie Hotel Echo Sierra Hotel India Romeo Echo. It's just, once you got it down, you can just spit them right out. And when you're on a scratchy communications channel, it helps to have the phonetic alphabet, so you can get things along. If you have a radio scanner, you can check and find out if any of the local ham radio clubs put the NASA feed off the satellite onto a local ham radio repeater. They do in many places around the country. You can actually hear this kind of chatter and hear them up and down with the phonetic alphabet and the numbers and 1, 2, decimal 3 in, you know, standard radio protocol format. Knowing this stuff before you get there helps, obviously. So let's look again at what you can start doing today to have the skills you need to be an astronaut in the future. You can start jogging. Study astronomy, which is something I forgot to mention here, but it helps. They give you a good background, but if you know it already, it helps too. Learn the phonetic alphabet. Get a ham radio license. Join the Civil Air Patrol or the Scouts if you're a young high school type kid. And become a student member of the AIAA, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, something I forgot to mention, so we bring it up here. The AIAA is the Aerospace Professional Society, and if you don't have a discipline yet, or you have a professional society to join, but you want to go to space, being a member of AIAA and maintaining that membership while you join the professional society of your profession is a good idea for keeping in touch with the news of space. Their publications are fantastic. It will keep you up to date as to what is going on. You can click here to find a student chapter anywhere in the country. The student chapters, again, for the high school that's looking for a college to go to, if you want to, go to a college that has a chapter of AIAA, and you're just progressing along the path that leans you towards becoming an astronaut. You want to follow your chosen profession because that's what's going to be fun, but NASA needs people in practically every chosen profession. Medicine? Absolutely. Chemistry. Geology, if you're going to study the moon rocks or Mars rocks or what have you. Metallurgy, because the guys that make rocket engines need to work on stuff too. Every field, they need somebody. Almost any field you could want to go into, you can find an application that can put you on the road to being an astronaut. So here we've got the various regions. You know, basically they cover the country. New England student section, New England section of student branches. We find Boston University, MIT, is anyone surprised? Worcester Polytechnic Institute, you know, all over the country. The year I lived in Boston, this was back in the 70s, I had a membership card as a student member of AIAA, just member at large. They let me hang out at the AIAA student chapter at MIT. And it was just great. You know, who else do you want to go have a beer with but other space cadets interested in this stuff and interested in going up? It was great. I got to meet O'Neill, who designed the O'Neill colonies. He came up to speak at a dinner one time. It's just wonderful opportunities. One of the people that was in that group was Eric Drexler, who is now the big nanotechnology guy. So if you ever run into him, tell him Ozzy said hello. I never met him under the Cheshire identity. But there you have it. There are all these information sources that are available. But if you start hacking NASA, you're going to throw it all away. Myself, I got caught behind the lines with an expired pass 15 years ago. And it took 14 years to get access back on the Space Center after that. So that's why I came up with Cheshire's Law. You can't break the rules because it's really going to go against you. But once you find out what they are, you can abuse the heck out of them. Oh, yeah, the addendum, which was only added in the last year. Learn Russian. If you have any intention of working on the International Space Station in any way, shape, or form, you will need to work with our Russian partners. And don't worry about the Euros because those guys will speak English. But you need to learn some Russian so you can get along with them. And what do you know about soccer?
You can play football everywhere else.
That's right. And you need to start learning about it so you have something to talk to with those guys once you get up there. Something you can have friendly rivalries about and kid each other about. And something that you at least know the concepts of, that you all know the concepts of. They won't know the concept of the Beverly Hillbillies. Or Gilligan's Island. Well, maybe they might know Gilligan's Island, you know. Yeah, they know blue jeans. It's kind of run out of things to talk about with blue jeans after a while. Soccer, football will keep things interesting. And you'll always have something fresh because there's always another football match. So basically, you know, for you hackers out there, think sneaky, but act squeaky, as in squeaky clean. Keep your nose clean. You know, keep thinking sneaky because you have to. It's that weird mindset we hackers have that tries to look under the hood of how things work that NASA needs. You know, everybody needs it to troubleshoot. It's how you troubleshoot well is by figuring out, okay, what is it doing now and why is it doing that thing poorly or screwing up? And you got to figure out what's causing it. And we hackers have that kind of mindset. It lends us to do naughty things. And like I say, kids like to be naughty. We're all just grown-up kids. But you got to keep it clean, but they really need us to think sneaky once in a while. Any questions?
Can we get questions?
Yeah, please wait for a microphone for questions, and it doesn't look like we have much of any. Oh, yes.
I walked in late, so I unfortunately didn't hear everything that you'd covered, but approximately what are the chances of becoming an astronaut working for NASA? I mean, as a child, it was a dream of mine, and once I realized, you know, they basically pick only a handful every few years, I was also led to believe that, you know, you had to be really keen in math and all, you know, science, which are obviously helpful
That's
things.
That's what they'd like you to believe.
Right.
Yes, it helps to be very fluent in some of the higher-level maths. They'll put you through what you need to know in some of the training classes. It helps to be good in school because it's one of the criteria. You know, they'll look at your grades. It depends. They might. The trick is that what they're looking at is the interest and desire that you're not going to quit on them because they're going to put an awful lot of money into training you.
Right.
That's why people have come back for the third, fourth, and fifth try and keep persevering to try and make the cut, keep looking better and better because they show that kind of guts. They haven't given up, and they need that kind of perseverance.
Do I need to move to Florida to do this?
No, you don't. No. Anywhere you go, any of those colleges that have student chapters of AIAA is a good place to start. Just start hanging out with the kids, finding out, you know, what you can do to help to, you know, set up their programs, what have you. You know, even as old as you are, I'd say go find a student chapter. In fact, join the AIAA. For a student member, it's fairly cheap. For someone older like yourself, it's a bit expensive. It's the best place to find information. If there's a local AIAA chapter near you, which are usually where there are aerospace industries, join by all means, because one, they'll be happy to have a new face. Two, if you start volunteering for things, they'll find things for you to do, and you just get yourself known in the community. It's one of those things you want to do to lean yourself into the space industry and try and find your way to Houston. Microphone.
For those of us who are interested in other avenues, what would be good in order to possibly work for NASA or a NASA-related company or organization?
Well, let's see. There are about 1,300 NASA employees at the Kennedy Space Center. Mm-hmm. There are about 19,000 employees working for contractors at the Kennedy Space Center. Now, this is hardly ever brought up to the public, but a job at the Space Center generally means a job with a contractor at NASA. You don't have to work for NASA itself to be involved in the space program. I mean, to be involved in space, you know, a ham ticket and a transceiver, you can be talking via satellites. You can be involved in the space program. And the way I'd like everyone to get involved in the space program is with a 33-cent stamp. Actually, three 33-cent stamps, one for your congressman and one for each of your two senators. And let them know. You want to be sure they vote for the NASA budget. And you don't have to get more explicit than that because all they do is they just tally them up, they count them. But send them something so they can count it. You don't want to get too involved because they're busy. You just want to be sure that you get in the count, in my humble opinion. And that's what I do on launch day, is I go to Spaceview Park instead of the VAB so I can explain things to tourists. I stand there with my ham radio listening to the NASA feed, and people crowd around and ask me questions, and I explain about the flight, the mission, you know, this, that, and the other, and hopefully get a couple of them involved and interested and at least writing to their Congress critters. And maybe finding out more.
Do you know when the
next
launch is?
The next launch. Let's see. What have I got here? Huh. Thought I have a link from here, but I don't. Okay, Spacey Ideas. com/launchfaq.html. When are the next shuttle launches? Come on. September 8th is the next shuttle launch. And June 30th should have been a TDRS launch. July 14th should be the next EchoStar launch on an Atlas. TDRS should also have gone up on an Atlas. What I need to do now is go to the Space Today section of Florida Today newspaper and find out if that TDRS actually got off the launch pad. Space Today. Florida Today also has an extended schedule of launches, and I consider it to be the most authoritative of the launch schedules around. Okay, so they did launch that puppy at 8:56 a.m. on Friday. So it did go up. It was a TDRS satellite, TDRS, a Tracking and Data Relay Satellite, which is used to relay information from low Earth orbiting satellites, including the space shuttle. It then routes to a receiving station at White Sands Missile Range and is then shipped back to the Goddard Space Flight Center, where they collect all the data. So now I know that I can delete that TDRS from my list and put EchoStar 6 at the top. And what I do is I'll have a link from the payload. I also have a link from the booster to a Boeing page or a Lockheed Martin page. Now that one's taking too long. One of my favorites, no, I haven't got it in yet. Sometime next year they've got, whatever they have, yeah, secret military payload on an Atlas II. So what I do is I go out to the National Reconnaissance Office, which is usually who's running the payload. They have a publicly available website. So it's not like I'm giving away military secrets or anything. But it looks good. The script kiddies go, ooh, ah. And if it's a public website, I'm sorry, it's fair game. It's a link to them. And Navstar, GPS, has a bunch of launches coming up.
I think Navstar is my favorite.
Which one?
My personal favorite, Navstar.
Huh. So this is going out to the U.S. Coast Guard Navigation Center, where you can pick up more information about the GPS constellation, as well as other systems. Loran C is still out there. Probably going to show Omega on one of these things. I think Omega may have finally been taken down. Yeah, Omega's finally off the air. But Loran C is still too useful for a bunch of mariners. So that's where I take the GPS stuff. International Space Station assembly flights. This is going out to spaceflight.nasa.gov. And each flight has its... Oh, they've changed the URL. I got some work to do. Okay. I'm sorry it happened during a demo like this, but let's see if this one still works. Mission patches for the next two missions, because they're within about 2 or 3 weeks of each other. Yeah. So I got to move the tag from the one down to the other. But I'm going to the wrong place. 2A. Huh. Well, I've got some real work to do then. Let's put a B in there. See if that gets us someplace. Yeah, that's what that needs to be. September 8th, right. So, I'm missing a B in the URL. Yep. Let's see. If you folks don't mind... change local directory /temp. Present working directory is slash, so cd /htdocs/spacyideas.com/get launchfaq.html.
Cheshire, it's LCD instead of CLD.
It's CD to change directory.
LCD for the local, because you were trying to change it to the temp.
Yes. Trying to change the one that was out at the remote site. LCD was the /temp for the local directory inside the machine here. So now it's !! edit, launchfaq.html. Find, Alt S for search, F for find, and that was 2A2 dot B, add the B, save, exit, put the file name. Opening. I should have done a hash so we'd see the little hash marks going across. Just waiting for it to come around on the guitar. Go back. Reload. Stop it, click on it again, and now it goes to the right one. However, that it. Search to B dot. What I forgot to do was change the name of it where it got printed on the page. File save, file exit. Hash, put. Go back to that page. There's the little hash marks going across. Okay, it's a 65K file. Back. Reload. And now it's got the 2A.2B. Goes to the right place. I'm happy. And if you run across these kind of bugs, please email me. At the top of practically all of my pages, there's an email address. In this case, under my real name. When people ask who's the Cheshire Catalyst, I tell them Richard Cheshire. Okay, they walk away happy because they know that Spider-Man is Peter Parker. They know that Clark Kent is Superman. A third level of abstraction, strictly for privacy purposes, doesn't occur to most people. Having been with you for more than half an hour, I'm happy to tell you my real name is Robert Osband. It's the worst kept secret on 4 continents now. But when I get that 3 a.m. phone call for Cheshire, I know where it's coming from. That's what that's about. Because Cheshire is my public persona, and Ozzy I kind of keep personal. But top of every page, I usually have an email address. And in fact, Control-End, I'll usually have an email address down at the bottom somewhere, too. In this case, ozzy@spacyideas.com. So you can look for them there. Part of my web philosophy is always have a contact point on every page. Because with AltaVista, with Google, Dogpile, all these search engines, you can be brought into the middle of any website. You don't know how they got to that page. So every page must appear to be standalone. Whatever you've explained on previous pages, somebody just got here. They don't know that background information yet. You got to tell them again, or you got to have a link to the information again, in my humble opinion. But that's because I like to make things easy for newcomers. Whole other subject. We went into that yesterday. So, that's it. Learn Russian, learn Morse code, get your ham ticket, learn the phonetic alphabet, and please Once you go up, please send me one of your mission patches. Thanks a lot.